Hey everyone, it's Jeanette
and Kim,
producers here at The Bitchery of History. As we close out season three, we want to hear from you, our listeners, and give you something in return. So, from now until the end of May, everyone who leaves us a review will be qualified for a giveaway.
What? Amazing. So you might have seen on our Insta or on the website store that we have brand new Bitches Get Stuff Done stickers, which are amazing. So if you send us a screenshot of your review, we'll send you a sticker in return for free.
For free.
What?
You can DM us your screenshot on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, or you can email us directly at umpboh@gmail.com.
And this giveaway only lasts until May 31st, so hurry and tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, be our friend, get a sticker, and remember,
bitches get stuff done.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, friends.
And welcome to
The Bitchery of History.
My name is Max.
And I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm talking to you about Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
I am so stoked.
Yes.
Cannot wait. I am going to be talking about Constance Markievicz.
Yes. You'll notice over the next 2 weeks, we are doing suffragettes because May and June are voting months. We're getting
Get
into
it.
Primary season.
Also, I did re-register to vote with my new address.
Good.
And you know what's crazy? When I went on the Secretary of State website, I tried to look up my current registration to then just be like, let me edit my address. I couldn't find my voter registration.
Really?
It said I wasn't registered, which is weird because I have voted many times.
That is strange.
In California. So I just re-registered to vote.
Good.
Completely. But I don't know what's going on. Well, but it was super easy, and I did it online on my computer. I just Googled register to vote.
And you got your validation? You got the thing saying, you're all done. You're
registered. I got an email that was like...
It's all you need. Perfect. Great.
You can vote now.
My favorite one is rock the vote.
Yes. Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. So
just a quick shout out, reminder, vote.
Register to vote.
So Constance Georgine Markievicz was actually born Constance Georgine Gore Booth in 1868 in London, England, in the neighborhood of Buckingham Gate.
Uh-huh.
Now, she later became known as Countess Markievicz. Get ready, because there's a lot. And I'm going to kind of fast forward through her life until things really get going.
Buckingham Gate sounds like a scandal at Buckingham Palace.
Oh my gosh, it totally does. So her father was an Arctic explorer, a landlord, and philanthropist. During the famine of 1879, he basically just provided free food to all of the tenants on his estate.
Oh, wow.
So this example inspired Constance and her younger sister, Eva, to have this deep concern for working people and the poor kind of throughout their life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eva goes off and kind of has her own story and her own life in the women's suffrage movement in England. Eva goes off on that path, and Constance kind of is like, peace out. I want to be an artist. I'm going to go to London and study art at the Slade School, because there was only one school in Dublin at the time that accepted female applicants. Wah, wah. They lived in Dublin at the time. So then she goes to the Julian School in Paris, and that's where she meets Casimir Dunin Markievicz.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was known in Paris as Count Markievicz, and when Constance's family was kind of like, Count of what?
Count of where?
Count of who?
Count Chocula?
Yeah. The Russian secret police says that he has taken the title without right, and that there had never been a Count Markievicz in Poland. But the Department of Genealogy in St. Petersburg said that he was entitled to claim to be a member of the nobility. So, what?
So your lineage doesn't exist, but you're cool to use the title.
So, basically go to Paris and tell them that you are a count and just see what happens.
Oh.
I guess. I don't know. So they married. Markievicz had been married and had some kids, but he was separated at the time that they met.
Mm-hmm.
They marry in London in 1900. And then afterwards, she was just known as Countess Markievicz.
Okay.
I mean, I'm down to marry someone and just never go by my name again be a countess.
I'm down to just start calling myself Count Max.
Do it. New Twitter handle, for sure. Now, she gives birth to a daughter, but the child was mainly raised by her grandparents and eventually becomes estranged from her mother. In 1903, they move back to Dublin, and she starts to gain a reputation for herself as a landscape artist. So we're kind of fast-forwarding through almost like a typical life. Get married, become an artist, like it's early 1900. Uh-huh. Not a lot of outlets for women. Now, in 1906, the Countess rented a small cottage in the countryside around Dublin, and the person who had previously rented it was a poet. And he had left behind old copies of The Peasant and Sinn Féin. I looked up how to say it. Mm-hmm. Now, this was actually a revolutionary publication that pushed for independence from British rule in Ireland. And the Countess read it and was immediately taken in. So in 1908, she becomes actively involved in the nationalist politics in Ireland. She joined Sinn Féin, which in English means we ourselves. It's a left-wing Irish political party. And she joined a women's movement founded by Maud Gonn, who was the muse of W.B. Yeats. Just quick side note.
Okay.
So she comes directly to her first meeting from a function at Dublin Castle, which was the seat of British rule in Ireland, wearing a satin ball gown and a diamond tiara. I mean, she's a countess.
Probably sticking
clearly.
Out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, naturally the members looked upon her with some hostility, and this refreshing change from being just sort of like seen as this countess and people giving her shit, basically. Right. She was like, oh, I want to do this. This is great.
That's a
you
great
reaction.
You
people are real. Now, she plays a dramatic role in the same year in the women suffrage campaigners' tactic of opposing Winston Churchill's election to Parliament. At one point, she drives an old-fashioned horse-drawn carriage, four white horses, down the street to promote the suffragist cause, and a male heckler asked her if she could cook a dinner, to which she responded, yes, can you drive a coach and four? Holler. She's like not taking it. Like, of course
like
I can cook
see,
dinner.
Would you like to see me do both at once?
Yeah. So her sister Eva had moved to Manchester to live with a fellow suffragette, and they both campaigned against Churchill with the Countess. Mm-hmm. Churchill lost the election in part as a result of the suffragists' dedicated opposition, which is crazy. In 1911, she was jailed for the first time for a part of the demonstrations that took place against the visit of the king, George V. Mm-hmm. During this protest, she handed out leaflets and erected great masts that said, "Dear land, thou art not conquered yet." And she participated in stone throwing at pictures of the king and queen and attempted to burn the giant British flag taken from Lannister House. Which is just crazy.
She don't play no games.
Yeah. So then she joins like the Irish Citizen Army, the ICA, to defend the demonstrators working from the police. She recruited volunteers to peel potatoes in a basement while distributing food. Now, all of this food was paid out of her own pocket.
Whoa.
She was forced to take out many loans at this time, and she sold all of her jewelry, though she is supposed to have said, quote, "Dress suitably in short skirts and strong boots, leave your jewels in the bank, and buy a revolver." Which is the best quote of all time.
I feel
I'm
like
just
we need
like,
to make that into a shirt
I,
or a black
yeah,
band or something.
Leave your jewels in the bank and buy a
say
revolver.
Say the whole thing again.
Dress suitably in short skirts and strong boots, leave your jewels in the bank and buy a revolver. I mean, that sounds like something Jessica Jones would say.
Literally, it's like out of our own time.
Yeah, it's great. In 1913, the Count moves back to Ukraine and never returned to Ireland. They did correspond. We don't really know. He was at her side when she died later, but they weren't really close.
They didn't divorce either.
No, but they just like didn't live together. But also we have to remember it's like the 1920s and marriage very different back then than it is now.
Sure.
She designed the Citizen Army uniform and composed its anthem, which was based on the tune of a Polish song. In the Rising, she fought in St. Stephen's Green, where on the first morning, she, according to one account, shot a unarmed policeman of the Dublin Metropolitan Police, who died of his injuries. However, other accounts place her at City Hall when the policeman was shot, and she only came by later. So, not totally sure. But basically, the garrison in Stephen's Green, they're all kind of... It's a big protest, war, army, volunteers, all these things.
A riot.
And a riot, but the garrison and Stephen's Green held out for 6 days, but it ended when the British brought in a copy of a surrender order, basically. They were then taken to Dublin Castle, and then she was transported to prison. She was the only one of 70 women prisoners who were put into solitary confinement. At her court-martial, Markovitz pleaded not guilty to taking part in an armed rebellion, but did plead guilty to having attempted to cause disaffection among the civil population of His Majesty, which is like a great cause.
Disaffection.
Yeah. Quote, I went out to fight for Ireland's freedom and it does not matter what happens to me. I did what I thought was right and I stand by it, end quote. So she was sentenced to death, but then the court recommends mercy solely on account of her sex. Now, when she was told this, she said to her captors, quote, I do wish your lot had the decency to shoot me. Praise!
I do wish.
Praise! Leave your jewels in the bank and buy a revolver. Like, if you're not gonna let me have my revolution, then just shoot me already.
The decency to shoot me.
Oh, I love it. So eventually she's transferred from prison to prison. She is moved to a prison in England in July 1916, and then she's released in 1917, along with a lot of others involved in the Rising. Because they kind of just granted a general amnesty for them. And she, although she'd been born into the Church of Ireland, she at this point converts to Catholicism. There's still more going on. So in 1918, general election, she was elected for the constituency of Dublin St. Patrick's, beating her opponent, William Field, with 66% of the vote.
Whoa.
As one of 73 Sinn Féin MPs. This made her the first woman elected to the British House of Commons. However, because of Sinn Féin's abstentionist policy, she was elected but didn't take her seat in the House of Commons. Mm-hmm. She then served as Minister for Labor from April 1919 to January 1922 in the Second Ministry and the Third Ministry of the Dáil, holding cabinet rank from April to August 1919. Mm. She became both the first Irish female cabinet minister, and she was the only female cabinet minister in Irish history until 1979.
Whoa.
She left the government in 1922, and then she fought actively for the Republican cause in the Irish Civil War, helping to defend Moran's Hotel in Dublin. After the war, she tours the U.S., goes kind of like on a speaking tour. She died at the age of 59 in 1927 of complications related to appendicitis. Mm. She had given away the last of her wealth and died in a public ward among the poor, which is where she wanted to be. Her husband came back to her bedside. She was refused a state funeral by the Free State government and was just buried in the cemetery in Dublin. But it's estimated that over 250,000 people lined the streets for her funeral.
Whoa.
Sean O'Casey, an Irish playwright and socialist, says, quote, one thing she had in abundance, physical courage, with that she was clothed with as a garment.
Wow. She reminds me a lot of the bandit queen, Phoolan Devi.
Yeah.
In India.
Yes.
She's like this outlaw who gets elected to the parliament, except Phoolan took her seat.
Yeah. Well, she just kept being elected and being like, no, I'm taking my jewels to the bank. Bye. So good.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Elizabeth?
I am ready.
Stanton, the mother of suffrage.
Goddess bless America.
Quote, the history of the past is but one long struggle upward to equality.
Praise.
And also, come, my conservative friend, wipe the dew off your spectacles and see that the world is moving.
Double praise. I volunteer as tribute. I'm ready. Continue.
So born in Johnstown, New York on November 12th, 1815 to Daniel and Margaret Livingston Cady, she was the eighth of 11 children.
Oh boy.
Five of her siblings unfortunately died in early childhood or in infancy. Mm-hmm. And her older brother, Eliezer, dies at 20. So Elizabeth and four of her sisters live into adulthood.
Wow.
Now it's important to note that her father, Daniel Cady, was a prominent Federalist attorney who served actually one term in Congress from 1814 to 1817.
Okay.
He became a circuit court judge and in 1847, a New York Supreme Court justice.
Oh, wow.
So this early introduction to the law through her father is what plants the seeds for Elizabeth's legal and social activism later on in her life. She would accompany her father to work, read his law books, discuss law issues with his clerks.
Wow.
It was during this time that she first realized that the law favored men disproportionately over women, especially married women. Elizabeth's mother was reportedly very tall. Elizabeth referred to her constantly as being queenly. Ooh. And unfortunately, because of the loss of so many of her children, her mother falls into this very deep depression. Mm. And her father, for the same reason, throws himself into his work. So Elizabeth is essentially raised by her older sister, Tryphena, and her husband, Edward Bayard, who is also a lawyer at the time. Right. Elizabeth goes on later in life, she wants to attend Union College like many of her male classmates that she'd grown up with, mm-hmm. and like her brother, Eliezer, who dies right. eventually. But Union College was not accepting women at the time. So instead, she enrolled in the Troy Female Seminary in New York. Elizabeth okay. Cady, it's here where she meets Henry Brewster Stanton, and she becomes involved in the temperance and abolition movements.
Okay.
Now, Henry was actually an acquaintance of her cousin, an abolitionist, and a member of the, quote, Secret Six that supported John Brown's raid at Harper's Ferry in West Virginia.
Ooh, okay.
Tie back to Harriet Tubman with John okay. Brown and the raid on Harper's Ferry.
Okay.
Now, despite her father's reservation, she marries Henry. And uh-huh. for the ceremony, Elizabeth requested of the minister to take out the phrase, quote, promise to obey in the vows. And she wrote, quote, I obstinately refused to obey one with whom I supposed I was entering into an equal relation.
Nice.
They had 7 children. She had her last child when she was 44 years old.
Jeezum.
Right. So they moved into their house in Jonestown. Her husband starts practicing law under his father-in-law. And then they moved to Boston, where Henry joins a law firm. Now, in Boston, Elizabeth becomes very active and participates in abolitionist gatherings. And it's here where she meets and is influenced by Frederick Douglass, William Lloyd Garrison,
nice.
Louisa May Alcott,
nice.
And Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Classic.
Oh, exactly. Now, in 1847, Henry starts not doing very well health-wise.
Okay.
And they move to Seneca Falls in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's there where they have their 4 remaining children. And Elizabeth really enjoyed raising them in a very non-conventional way. She encouraged them to be individuals and wanted them to be highly educated and to go to college. However, in Seneca Falls, she was very far away from where the women's movement was taking place, and she felt left out. So she kept in contact with Susan B. Anthony by mail, mm-hmm. and began writing speeches for her, even though the two had never met
what?
In person. Now, in 1848, this is where we get the main thing, one of the biggest moments in her life. Her, along with Lucretia Mott,
uh-huh.
her sister Martha Coffin Wright, and Jane Falls, they organize the Seneca Falls Convention,
yes.
which takes place on July 19th and 20th. Over 300 people attend the Seneca Falls. And it's here where Elizabeth writes what's known as the Declaration of Sentiments, which is modeled actually after the Declaration of Independence.
Perfect.
In it, she proclaims that men and women are created equal and proposes a resolution demanding voting rights for women. Frederick Douglass attends and speaks at the convention as well. And these proposals in the Declaration of Sentiments actually were each individually voted on and appropriated by the convention as a whole. And in fact, the last one, which called for votes for women,
uh-huh.
would not have passed if it had not been for the support of Frederick Douglass and other prominent men who were there at the time.
We all need allies.
Exactly. Now, after that, Elizabeth is invited to speak at various women's conventions in New York, including the Rochester Convention of 1848 and the first National Women's Rights Convention of 1850. However, she was pregnant for
okay.
the second one, the first National Women's Rights Convention. So she just signed her speech and sent it on and said, someone else can read this. So it's still her words
that
were spoken.
That's so cool.
Now, in 1851, Elizabeth finally meets Susan B. Anthony on a street in Seneca Falls.
Whoa!
The two complimented each other very well, apparently, as Susan B. Anthony was single and didn't have any children and was freer to travel.
Right.
While Elizabeth was a better speechwriter. So while everyone really knows who Susan B. Anthony is, they don't know that Elizabeth Cady Stanton was the one who was really behind a lot of her speeches and a lot of her words. Exactly. Now, I won't say all of the words.
Right. But like, she was kind of like the female Alexander Hamilton.
Exactly. Elizabeth wrote of Susan B. Anthony, quote, she writes this in a letter.
Yeah.
No power in heaven, hell, or earth can separate us, for our hearts are eternally wedded together.
Dang. That's intense.
So skipping forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
After the Civil War, both mm-hmm. Elizabeth and Susan B. Anthony lobbied against the ratification of the 14th and 15th Amendments. Now, for those of you who don't right. remember, 14th Amendment addresses citizenship rights and equal protection of the laws. It was proposed in response to the end of slavery after the Civil War.
Right.
15th Amendment prohibits the federal and state governments from denying a citizen the right to vote based on that citizen's race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Now, they argued against it because they feared that if the number of men who were going to be allowed to vote
right.
increased that exponentially, it would be that much harder to get women right. the right to vote.
Makes sense.
They wanted the amendments to include language that guaranteed women's rights to vote as well.
Include women in the sequel.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Now, while this is a valid argument, right. unfortunately, Elizabeth's rhetoric begins to take on racial overtones in
Ooh.
Opposition.
That's
she said
good.
That women voters of, quote, wealth, education, and refinement were needed in order to offset the effect of former slaves whose, quote, pauperism, ignorance, and degradation might negatively affect the political system.
Ooh.
And that's just the tame stuff, she says, is
oh,
what Jeanette
no.
says.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So it ends up causing a rift between her and Frederick Douglass. Because
well, yeah.
Frederick Douglass believed that white women vicariously had the vote through their connections to white men, and that the same would happen to African-American women once freed slave men had the right to vote. So another like half-baked.
I mean, it's like, I see what you're going for, Fred, but I'm not going to agree with that one.
Right. It's like I said the other day at a council meeting. It's like, I get your point, but not your argument.
Fair.
So the next year in 1869, when the 15th Amendment is finally making its way through Congress, mm-hmm. a lot of other women's rights leaders, including Lucy Stone and Elizabeth Blackwell, were disagreeing with Stanton's all-or-nothing position, which created two different organizations to form. So Stanton and Susan B. Anthony start the National Women's Suffrage Association in mm-hmm. 1869.
Right.
And Elizabeth served as the president for 21 years.
Wow.
They opposed the passage of the 15th Amendment unless it included female suffrage, and they also championed for a number of other women's issues. The other one is called the American Women's Suffrage Association, which was founded by Stone and Blackwell, which supported mm-hmm. the 15th Amendment, but was solely focused on women's suffrage, moving away from the other rights that right. Elizabeth was championing. Now, a lot of stuff ends up happening during this time. We're going to do a lady bit on her as well, so don't think okay. that this is everything.
Yeah.
There's a great speech that she makes that I want to talk about as well in a lady bit.
Excellent.
But unfortunately, Elizabeth dies on October 26th, 1902, in New York City, 18 years before women finally get the right to vote. Now, here's her legacy. Because of her more radical views on religion, after mm-hmm. her death, the more conservative and religious members of the women's suffrage movement actually chose to focus on Susan B. Anthony as the, quote, founder of the women's suffrage movement.
Ugh.
She had Elizabeth had alienated yeah. a lot of members by publishing what was known as the Women's Bible, which is where she edited the Bible to make it more friendly to women. And because of this, they
like the Bible ain't edited already. Please.
Exactly.
Oh, man. All right. Facepalm. Okay. Moving on.
So they basically tried to erase her from prominence in the movie by not talking about her at all.
Boo.
At the 75th anniversary of the Seneca Falls Convention in 1923, Elizabeth's daughter, Harriet Stanton Blatch, was the only person to pay tribute to the role her mother played in instigating the women's rights movement in the United States. Even though it, and this is a note from Jeanette, even though it literally happened because Elizabeth was bored and lived in Seneca Falls. So in 1921, Adelaide Johnson unveiled a sculpture of Susan B. Anthony, Lucretia Mott, and Elizabeth Stanton at the U.S. Capitol. In 1997, it was moved to more prominent display in the Rotunda. In 1965, the Elizabeth Cady Stanton House in Seneca Falls was declared a National Historic Landmark.
Thank you.
In 1969, the New York Radical Feminist named a brigade after her. In 1973, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame.
Excellent.
In 1975, her house in Tenafly, New Jersey was declared a National Historic Landmark. In 1999, Ken Burns produced a documentary called Not For Ourselves Alone, the story of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, which brought more attention to Elizabeth's central position to the women's rights movement.
I gotta watch that documentary.
Same.
I've never heard of it. And Ken Burns is super famous. Again, love. Why do I not know about these things? And I am a feminist. I should know. Mark Zuckerberg, you should know to send me that ad.
You literally.
You should know.
Literally. So that's a part of Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
That's like episode one.
Episode one.
That is awesome.
Hmm. Hey, friends. If you're enjoying this podcast, do Allison and myself and the rest of the team a favor and look down at that iPhone, Android device, computer that you're listening to this podcast on and do us a favor and give us a rating or a review. And or a review. Those ratings and reviews, they help other people find this podcast, which helps us keep doing this podcast. Thanks.
Hey, friends. If you have already left us a review and a rating, thank you so much. The next step is to go to patreon.com and search Ursula Major, or download the Patreon app and search it there right on your phone. On Patreon, you can find exclusive content just for our contributors. $1 a podcast, $5 a podcast. You can get bloopers, which there are plenty of, deleted scenes, and other special clips designed just for you. Thanks.
So, you found something on Pinterest that you wanted to share.
I know, man. Pinterest is the place these days. I forget. I have not been on in so long. And then I went on because I had a day off. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is such a rabbit hole. Ooh. What I found is this piece of prose or essay, maybe, called Why Do All These Guys Keep Putting Me in the Girlfriend Zone? So it's basically taking the friend zone and flipping it on its head. And I talk about it a fair amount because it's very smart and very well written. The link that I clicked on says that it's by Savior Yourself, but if that is incorrect, if any of you dear listeners know, please let us know, because I dig it.
If you wrote this, let us know.
Yes, please. And let us interview you, because you're dope. You know how it is, right, ladies? You know a guy for a while, you hang out with him, you do fun things with him, play video games, watch movies, go hiking, go to concerts, you invite him to your parties, you listen to his problems. You do all this because you think he wants to be your friend. But then comes the fateful moment where you find out that all this time he's only seen you as a potential girlfriend. And then if you turn him down, he may never speak to you again. This has happened to me time after time. I hit it off with a guy, and for all that I've been burned in the past, I started to think this one might actually care about me as a person. And then he asks me on a date. I tell him how much I enjoy his company, how much I value his friendship. I tell him I really want to be his friend and to continue hanging out with him and talking about our favorite books or exploring new restaurants or making fun of avant-garde theater productions, but he rejects me. He doesn't answer my calls or emails. If we'd been making plans to do something before this fateful incident, those plans mysteriously fail to materialize. This is why I never did get around to seeing the Hunger Games movie. Not to name any names, but thanks a lot, Tom. Later, when I run into him at social events, our conversations are awkward and lukewarm. This is because the moment we met, he put me in the girlfriend zone, and now he can't see me as friend material. I must say that I find this really unfair. I mean, I'm a nice girl. I have a lot to offer as a friend, like not being a douchebag and stuff. But males just don't want to be friends with nice girls like me. They can't help it, I guess. It's just how they're wired biologically. Evolution conditioned our male hominid ancestors to seek nice girls as mates and form friendship bonds only with the other dudes that they hunted mammoths with. It's true. I know this because I studied hominids in my fifth grade science class. So what's the answer? Should I take up mammoth hunting in an attempt to appeal to the friendship centers of men's primal lizard brains? Should I keep making guy friends and then prevent them from making a move on me by subtly undermining their self-confidence? Should I just give up on those manipulative, game-playing, two-faced bastards once and for all? I don't know. I mean, I'd really like to have a true friendship with a guy someday, but it's so hard to trust and respect them when they never say what they mean. You never know when you might be relegated to the girlfriend zone.
Whoa. It's, way to turn the script on.
It is beautiful. Yeah. It is beautiful, and it makes my heart glow and my heart cry and all of the feelings, because we've talked on the podcast before about the friend zone and mm-hmm. how it like doesn't exist and it's terrible. And there are a lot of other male celebrities that come out and say things, or just other male figures. And like, we all know that it's not real, but I think that this is just the clearest argument mm-hmm. that I've seen for explaining to a guy who might not be right. as open to the fact that the friend zone can't exist right. when you're like, well, the girlfriend zone.
Right. Well, there's a reason why like satire is such an enduring yes. and powerful form yes. of writing. Because sometimes you have to push things to their furthest logical conclusion mm-hmm. in order to show people like, no, this way of thinking is entirely stupid.
Yes.
I love it. Thanks for finding that.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to bring into this last mm-hmm. part before we sign out and say goodbye mm-hmm. is a little sneak preview of My Woman for next week.
Oh, I'm excited.
Now, next week, we're doing Fannie Lou Hamer, who was a voting rights activist in yes. the 1900s.
Oh, I am ready.
And she spoke at the 1964 Democratic National Convention. And I thought that it was interesting to put this speech in the same episode mm-hmm. as Elizabeth Cady Stanton, fighting for the same thing, just at different times.
I am ready.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Credentials Committee, my name is Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I live at 626 East Lafayette Street, Roseville, Mississippi, Sunflower County, the home of Senator James O. Eastland and Senator Stennis. It was the 31st of August in 1962 that 18 of us traveled 26 miles to the county courthouse in Indianola to try to register to become first-class citizens. We was met in Indianola by policemen, highway patrolmen, and they only allowed two of us in to take the literacy test at the time. After we had taken this test and started back to Roseville, we was held up by the city police and the state highway patrolmen and carried back to Indianola, where the bus driver was charged that day with driving a bus the wrong color. After we paid the fine among us, we continued on to Roseville, and Reverend Jess Sonny carried me 4 miles in the rural area where I had worked as a timekeeper and sharecropper for 18 years. I was met there by my children. They told me the plantation owner was angry because I had gone down, tried to register. After they told me, my husband came and said the plantation owner was raising Cain because I had tried to register. And before he quit talking, the plantation owner came and said, Fannie Lou, do you know, did Pap tell you what I said? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I mean that if you don't go down and withdraw your registration, you will have to leave. Said, then if you go down and withdraw, that you still might have to go because we are not ready for that in Mississippi. And I addressed him and told him that I didn't try to register for you. I tried to register for myself. I had to leave that same night. On the 10th of September, 1962, 16 bullets was fired into the home of Mr. and Mrs. Robert Tucker for me. That same night, two girls were shot in Roseville, Mississippi. Also, Mr. Joe McDonald's house was shot in. And June the 9th, 1963, I had attended a voter registration workshop, was returning back to Mississippi. 10 of us was traveling by the Continental Trailway bus. When we got to Winona, Mississippi, which is Montgomery County, 4 of the people got off to use the washroom, and 2 of the people to use the restaurant. 2 of the people wanted to use the washroom. The 4 people that had gone in to use the restaurant was ordered out during this time I was on the bus. But when I looked through the window and saw they had rushed out, I got off of the bus to see what had happened. And one of the ladies said it was a state highway patrolman and a chief of police ordered us out. I got back on the bus, and one of the persons had used the washroom got back on the bus too. As soon as I was seated on the bus, I saw when they began to get the five people in a highway patrolman's car. I stepped off of the bus to see what was happening, and somebody screamed from the car that the fire workers was in and said, "Get that one there." And when I went to get in the car, when the man told me I was under arrest, he kicked me. I was carried to the county jail and put in the booking room. They left some of the people in the booking room and began to place us in cells. I was placed in a cell with a young woman called Miss Yvester Simpson. After I was placed in the cell, I began to hear sounds of licks and screams. I could hear the sounds of licks and horrible screams. And I could hear somebody say, "Can you say yes, sir, nigger? Can you say yes, sir?" And they would say other horrible names. She would say, "Yes, I can say yes, sir." So I said, she said, "I don't know you well enough." They beat her I don't know how long. And after a while, she began to pray and ask God to have mercy on those people. And it wasn't too long before three white men came to my cell. One of these men was a state highway patrolman. And he asked me where I was from. And I told him Roosevelt. He said, "We're going to check this." And they left my cell, and it wasn't too long before they came back. He said, "You are from Roosevelt, all right." And he used a curse word. And he said, "We're going to make you wish you was dead." I was carried out of that cell into another cell where they had two Negro prisoners. The state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro to take the blackjack. The first Negro prisoner ordered me, by orders from the state highway patrolman, for me to lay down on a bunk bed on my face. And I laid on my face. The first Negro began to beat. And I was beat by the first Negro until he was exhausted. I was holding my hands behind me at that time on my left side because I suffered from polio when I was 6 years old. After the first Negro had beat until he was exhausted, the state highway patrolman ordered the second Negro to take the blackjack. The second Negro began to beat, and I began to work my feet. And the state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro had beat to sit on my feet, to keep me from working my feet. I began to scream, and one white man got up and began to beat me in my head and tell me to hush. One white man, my dress had worked up high. He walked over and pulled my dress. I pulled my dress down, and he pulled my dress back up. I was in jail when Medgar Evers was murdered. All of this is on account of we want to register to become first-class citizens. And if the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to sleep with our telephones off of the hook? Because our lives be threatened daily, because we want to live as decent human beings in America. Thank you.
That room is so silent.
Yeah.
Man, that's intense. I can't wait to hear more about her.
So that's Fannie Lou Hamer, 1964. We're going to talk about her next episode.
Next week's episode is going to crash.
And in the meantime, just remember that women have not had the right to vote for very long.
Not even 100 years.
And those who have had the right, everyone who has the right now has not had it that entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Register to vote and do it.
Our cause of the week this week, let's just keep going on that, is going to be Rock the Vote.
Yes.
Rockthevote.org. It's a nonpartisan nonprofit dedicated to building the political power of young people. It was actually founded by music executives in 1990 in response to the censorship of hip hop and rap artists. Their first partnership with MTV helped to promote the message that censorship is un-American and to engage young people across the country in fighting back.
Yes.
So check it out. There's even a great classic Madonna music video, rockthevote.org.
I love Rock the Vote. I like it because they are nonpartisan.
Yeah.
All they want is for you to register and vote.
If you want to keep in touch with us, find other cool articles and videos that we might be sharing, join us on Facebook. Just search The Bitchery of History.
You can also find us on Instagram at that same handle, The Bitchery of History.
Twitter's switching it up at Bitchery Podcast.
You can also find us on our website, UMPBOH. That's Ursula Major Productions, Bitchery of History. .com.
Order your stickers there.
Get those stickers. Contact us on that listener submission page.
As always, we could not make this show happen without our incredible team.
Yes.
So thank you to Sydney,
Jeanette,
Kim,
and Jess.
As always, bitches get stuff done.